sweet love though. Please don't talk about being true and all the troubles that we've been through. Please don't talk about all the plans that we've had for fixing this broken romance. I wanna go where the people dance. I wanna two-step. I wanna leave the two-step and let's get on the floor. Let's get together. Well, let's do it some more.
Ah yes, I love the nightlife. This is J.D. Doyle with Queer Music Heritage, and I won't be surprised if you don't recognize that version of the disco hit. It was Done Country by Scooter Lee, and while I don't know if she's gay, I thought it would be a nice way to get your attention and let you know that later in this show, I'll bring you an interview with Alicia Bridges, the artist who made that song a classic. But first up is an artist from Scotland I much admire. She's Horse McDonald and just goes by Horse, and she has been described as an artist who wouldn't have been out of place on the Stax or Motown labels in their heyday. You'll see why. She recently released her 8th full-length album since 1990, and I love it. It's called Red-Haired Girl. On my January show, I named it one of the best of 2007. And I've been a fan of her since 2000. When I was asked to help interview her when she appeared on Jimmy Carper's After Hours show. So I was very ready for her new album, and before I share my interview with her, I want to give you just a taste of one of the new songs. This one is called Catch My Fall.
It's hope that rustles my heart when I'm in the dark, afraid to go on and ache to give in. No matter how small, no matter how weak, there is a voice that gets us to speak. Whatever you do, and do what you must, make sure that you do it with all of your heart. Whatever you say, and say it you must.
I started the interview by asking her to tell us a little about her long career.
How little do you want? Because I could be here all night. I signed my first publishing deal in 1986-87 with EMI, and signed my first record deal in 1987, but the first album didn't come out till 1990. I've toured with numerous people like Tina Turner, B.B. King, Aztec Camera. I've opened for, probably one of my favourites was Burt Bacharach, because as a songwriter I greatly admire him, so that was a real career high. I've done a lot of touring with the band Horse, where I began, and latterly do put bands together or players together as and when I need them. I started off wanting to write and record when I was quite small, and I've been very lucky to do that for quite some time now. I've had two major deals. The first one, as I say, was with EMI, and the second one was with MCA Universal.
How has your music changed over the years?
I suppose the listener would be the best person to ask about that. When you sign a deal and you're quite naive, you tend to do as you're told. But you're also trying to work amongst other players. And with the band, there was myself and Angela, the other songwriter, but there was another two or three other musicians. So the chemistry of that is affected by the different musicians. and trying to balance everyone's wishes, wants and needs. And as time's worn on, I particularly write and work on my own mostly with a couple of key musicians that I use. I would say that the music's a little less rock and a little more eclectic now, and that is me, a bit more me, allowing myself to be myself. I tend to try and work with the song first, and that hopefully means that the song will end up on the right vehicle. So I guess I think I've got more control over the years, and I hope a little more emotive.
Which song gets the most audience attention?
There are a few of my songs which get a fantastic response, and again, Careful is one of them. God's Home Movie from the second album, and as I say, Hindsight is one. And from the new album, Fade Away and Catch My Fall get great reactions. I would say that the Careful has become my way, my Frank Sinatra's My Way. Very recently, I lost my mum and I lost my dad, and it's been a very difficult time. And Careful, a song I never attached to me for any particular reason, has now very much become attached, because I sang it to my mum before she died, and it's almost like a coming round in a full circle. So I suppose Careful is perhaps synonymous with me now more than it ever was.
Sunshine on your upturned face, everything falls into place. Blue sky above and underfoot, happiest I have seen you look. Sunrise stirs the low landscape, more beauty than your breath can take. Boats out to seagulls in the air, I might look as if I didn't care. I've been both and I can't win. If this love should suffer sudden death, it won't be because I'm not myself. I don't forget, I depend upon the simple fact you turn my heart over, over, over.
That was Careful from the first album by Horse, The Same Sky, released in 1990. Of what song that you've written are you the most proud?
I think I always have thought of my songs as babies. And you give birth to your latest song and it's very precious, and you don't want people getting a hold of it and changing it, etc. And we, myself and Angela, used to speak about our songs as when you went in with a producer, you would go in with a, say, a black-haired baby and come out with a red-haired baby. So I think the songs I'm most proud of are what I would call classic horse songs, Careful being one, and God's Home Movie, and songs from my latest selection of, in the last, say, 3-4 years, songs like Hindsight, It's a Wonderful Thing, and maybe Can't Break My Heart, songs which are quite emotive and quite powerful. I think Hindsight is, to me, one of my standout songs I'm very proud of. Posthumously, after it was written, I did a tour and a showcase and ended up in New York, and it was after 9/11, and a lot of people that I spoke to were very moved when they heard the song. And without, I wasn't one of those people that went off and wrote a song specifically, but Hindsight just seemed to be a song that was about that moment in time.
I've been taking the A train to all the places I never got to, all the people I never clung to. I've been wishing my life away, and you know what, I'm immortal. Little bitter with twist of cynical, but the thought never leaves me, what it could have been. I know that I could have, in fact I'm sure that I should have. I would have, if my ifs and buts didn't blind me.
Are any of your songs lyrically gay?
I tend to think of the songs as for everyone and for anyone to listen to and interpret as they will. I've had letters from people over the years saying how important the music has been to them. So people who are specifically gay and felt that they had no one to look at or have in front of them as an example of what it's like to be gay. And it's a bit of an honour when people look at you and they have something to hold on to. And I've kind of felt that a lot of my time I didn't. So I'm pleased to say that I'm here for everybody. I don't think there is anything that's specifically lyrically gay. It will be if you want it to be.
Well, she may have been thinking there was nothing lyrically gay on the new album, but I did find a track of hers that touches on a relationship between two women. From the 2001 album, Hindsight, It's a Wonderful Thing, here's just a bit of the song, Dear Sophie.
It's not a phase. How can we be lovers when we are just friends? She said, dear Sophie, I love you. I want to tell the world how much I love you. I want my arms about you. It really doesn't matter what anyone thinks.
I know this next song is considered one of her classics, so I definitely wanted to ask Horse about the song God's Home Movie, a song she co-wrote with Angela McAlinden.
God's Home Movie is probably one of my best songs, and God's Home Movie was written with Angela McAlinden. I remember writing the melody, because I tend to write the melodies, or I did tend to write the melodies with that partnership, and I remember exactly where I was sitting. I remember the time of day. It was one of those magical moments where the song, or the melody rather, just came to me, like some magical moment. The next part of the process was handing the precious melody over to Angela for her to do lyrics. And the lyrics are probably some of the most beautiful words that she's written. I think the whole theme of the song is the idea of someone you love very much being able to dip into God's treasury or library of snippets of people's lives and be able to choose moments from that person's life, and that's the whole sort of theme of the song. I think it's a beautiful idea, and therefore God's Home Movie is the simplicity of the melody and the simplicity of the lyrics just makes the thing. It's just a magical song. It is one of the most popular songs that I still do, and it was the title of the second album. It's just one of the most popular songs that we've ever done, and very proud of that song.
There's something I'd like to see from God's home movie. The story of your neighbors and my baby. I'd see storage of time from memory. I watch the car.
there's something I'd like to see from God's home movie, the story of the universe and my baby. I'd see discoveries made.
That was the title track from her 1993 album, God's Home Movie. Time to get back to the latest album and the song This Time.
This Time is a track which I wrote with Angela. Again, you've chosen tracks that I wrote with Angela McAlinden. I like the darkness of it, but also I like the groove. I think lyrically, again, it's a gem. It's a good Angela McAlinden lyric. It's got a very dark lyric as well. It's pretty much about wanting something to work because in the past things have not worked out. There's, again, relationships. You'll try anything, any superstition. You'll try everything to try and get this relationship to work this time. But again, when I perform it, I feel like it's an angry song. So I certainly give it that. But it's one of those ones where you can almost imagine somebody speaking through gritted teeth. So I tend to sort of sing it in a kind of snarling way. And when we get to the ad-lib section at the end, where I do literally ad-lib, then I can really go to town with that.
I'm across the sun. I'm reading the leaves. In the night I hear you calling. In the night I hear you calling. This time, oh, this time. In another life I must have done the wrong thing. But this time, oh, this time. In the night it gets so lonely.
And while it's a tough call, I think my favorite track from the new album is Can't Break My Heart. Can you please tell us about it?
Can't Break My Heart, I think, is one of my favorite songs that I've ever been involved with writing. Can't Break My Heart, melodically, is desperately sad. And the lyric that, again, Angela McAlinden wrote is extremely poignant, a very angry lyric as well. And the sadness in the lyric and the melody, a lot of people relate to it. And I did a show, I'm showing off now, but I did a show at the Albert Hall and I performed to a full house, a big Stonewall concert actually. And I performed Can't Break My Heart with a quartet, just voice and quartet. And people in the front, there was a couple of people in the front row sobbing. So I knew I'd had a successful performance, but also the song in particular had really moved people. Myself, my own situation. I mean, the song is not from last week. The song is a good 7 or 8 years old. Things that have happened in my life in the last 7 or 8 years make the song very personal to me as well. So when I do perform it, therefore, I really do put a lot of my own emotion into it. I think when you're writing songs, I think you don't always take the literal meaning of a song. And Can't Break My Heart, the literal meaning of Can't Break My Heart is somebody having had an affair or really done something pretty bad, and the singer or the teller of the story wanting that person out. And when you sing this song, you don't always pick up every single word, but you get the, you know, Can't Break My Heart comes across in a really, it just literally slaps you in the face, and the strings are really beautiful as well. So it's a great combination of emotion and passion.
Let me sing. My breath, you're not staying, so don't bother to undress. Pour me out a drink before you go gun crazy. I just want to mention it in passing.
Again, that was Horse from her new album, Red Haired Girl. And you can find out more about her at www.randan.org. That's www.randan.org. Now, many of us love the movie The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. There's recently been a stage musical production of it in Australia, and the soundtrack has the cast doing this song. Coming up, my special interview with Alicia Bridges. But this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artist and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Friday night, Saturday morning, from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. Now, I very much doubt that I have many listeners who are not familiar with the huge disco hit from 1978, I Love the Nightlife. I'm very pleased to share with you an interview with the artist who recorded and co-wrote that song, Alicia Bridges. And you'll see that the interview got off on the right foot right away.
Well, I was telling a friend of mine, you know, I don't believe it, tonight I'm interviewing Alicia Bridges, and she was very impressed.
Well, all right. I want to tell you that before you ever got in touch with us, I have visited your website many times.
Well, great.
And found a lot of really interesting stuff there and had a lot of fun with it. In fact, I got you saved in my favorites folders.
Good to hear.
I knew who you were.
Okay. Well, that's always nice. Tell me about your career prior to I Love the Nightlife.
Well, first of all, I was on the stage at 5 years old, tap dancing. That was my mother putting me there, and it was fun. I liked it. So I was on the stage at 5 years old. That doesn't count. But I sang all over North Carolina, and also the moment I'm probably proudest of is working with our band Zachary Ridge, which was composed of several guys from Knoxville, Tennessee, and our drummer from Charlotte, North Carolina. And we were playing lots of cover versions of the Janis Joplin music, which was a lot of fun. The Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, Uriah Heep, Grand Funk Railroad, and all of those types of things. And it was a really excellent band, and that was probably the most fun. I did a lot of songwriting along the way, and did a lot of work on and off playing my guitar and singing without bands. Then when I found Bill Lowry through Gary Walker was a friend of a friend who was in Tennessee and situated at a recording company there. And Gary, when I met him, took me to Bill Lowry, and Bill was very interested vocally and then the writing that I was doing as well. And that's when I began to write these songs that you're hearing now. So at that point in time, in the mid-70s there, all I did was write songs. He subsidized that with artist advances, and so that I could focus completely on songwriting and would not have to be out in a club singing cover versions and being tired and coming home and, oh, I don't know if I want to write a song or not. I was actually writing songs every day. It was a concentrated effort and a beautiful time through actually supporting me until we got the record out.
Can you tell me about the writing of I Love the Nightlife itself?
Yeah, we were in that songwriting, Susan Hutchinson and I were in that songwriting concentrated effort to write, and we were writing anything was considered for an idea. It didn't matter. Bill supported artistic freedom, and just write it all, girl, write it all, he'd say, with that deep voice, and so we did, and so we were writing about everything, and one day I said, let's write a song that has the word disco. And we did, kind of on a lark in a way, funny, kind of a lark. And as the song was, we wanted to make up with this person in the second verse, but Bill didn't like that idea. He said, no, don't make up with this joker. Go have a good time all by yourself. Come back and give me a rewrite on that second verse, or last verse. And so we did, and that's how the song stands now. It was his idea to have that second verse. And I think Make a Man Out of You might even have been, he encouraged that line.
That was my favorite line of the song. Maybe that'll make a man out of you.
Thank you. I kind of like that too. I've always been a smart aleck.
The song was such a huge hit, it must have been overwhelming. Can you kind of tell us about that?
Well, you know, it was in a way, in a big way, because what Bill would say to me, Bill Lowry, the publishing mogul of the Southeast, gosh, I love that man. He would say, we're going to put this record out now, Alicia, and don't worry if it's not a hit. Don't worry, because if it's not a hit, we'll just make another record. And we'll just keep making another record until something is a hit. So don't worry. And so really, I was more prepared for the song to be a flop than to be a hit. And when it was a hit, and then I had done some television, and then I couldn't go to the grocery store without being recognized, and people would come up behind me and grab me and say, I know who you are. And those kind of things were kind of strange. So, yeah, it was overwhelming. And it was overwhelming to do all of the interviews and the traveling and the things. But it was a lot of fun, too.
How many different versions or mixes of that song are there?
I've lost count. Maybe around 20 or so that I know of off the top.
From your first album, the song Body Heat also charted. Can you tell me about that one?
Body Heat. I knew a guy one time. He was a doctor in the Atlanta area. And he had to have people around him all the time. All the time. He gave me the idea. He probably doesn't even know that he was the inspiration for that song. That he could not survive alone in isolation. He had to have the body heat.
Unfortunately, there's so much ground to cover with Alicia that I won't be able to play full versions of the songs, but that one was Body Heat from 1978. Your follow-up album in 1979 was called Play It As It Lays. That got a bit of attention too, didn't it?
It did. It did get some attention. Of course, not like the other one. And I really have got to say at this point that the record company was probably not interested in helping promote that record. Record companies are squirrely.
Can you tell me about the title track, Play It As It Lays?
Play It As It Lays is what I try to do all the time. All the time. You know, honesty means a great deal to me, and always has. And Play It As It Lays, I like it when people just tell it like it is.
You say you want to find your place. Say it out loud. It's so strong. Hold back your hair. Take a look at your face. See it right now. See it so strong.
When in your career did you come out, and was that difficult for you?
I'm going to tell you something today. I don't think I ever told anybody, but I'm going to tell you because this is a special interview. So here's your exclusive. My mother told me when I was 13 years old that she was not going to have a homosexual live in her house. I didn't know what that was. I didn't know what it meant. And but she was extremely angry, and she had pegged me as gay, and I didn't know. I grew up in the country, and we didn't know what that was. I knew that, and as far as being a child, I always liked little girls better than I ever liked little boys. And always, and that followed through throughout my whole life, so I've always been gay, I guess that's how that is, but I didn't know what homosexual meant. So, and then my mother proceeded to tell everybody that we were related to that her daughter was a queer, I guess she was a homosexual, and it was hard for me to find any books about this and what it was, too. I tried to go into the libraries, but, you know, I guess I was about 13 years old, 12, 13 years old. I couldn't find any information, but I knew she was angry. And so really, it's really never been a secret. I've always been out no matter where I've been. And so I guess it was, shocked me one time when someone said to me, "Why don't you come out and tell people you're gay?" And I looked at her and I said, "Well, everybody knows it, don't they?" And I guess everybody didn't know it. I guess I have always been very open, and I didn't know that I needed to make a dramatic statement. All my bands have always known I'm a lesbian. Everybody I've known has always known this. Because, you know what, I really don't think I could live any other way. It's not always an easy thing to do, but it's the only way I know how, because I can't be something else. I mean, I'm what I am. And, but anyway, I guess I came out in The Advocate, back in the 90s, but I had also, marched in gay pride parades and been quite out and open in the 80s, publicly, but I don't know if anybody caught on to that. I was in the gay pride, in Long Beach and also in San Francisco, have been doing that for a long time. And I guess I just thought people knew. And maybe they didn't know.
So it wasn't really an issue when the big hit happened?
It really wasn't. Not with any of my people that I worked with or with the Lowry Group. I always knew I was gay and accepted it completely.
How did you become associated with the Olivia Records folks and the Second Wave label? This was 84.
It's pretty simple, really. Susan Hutchison said one day, she said, we ought to get somebody to talk to Olivia Records and see if they're interested in this music, because it's definitely gay, and definitely a lot of it to do with women. And I said, well, I really hadn't thought about that. And she said, well, I think we should call them. And I said, well, Susan, you know, do you think you'll get in touch with anybody that will talk to you? Because your record companies have always, in my opinion, been, you know, kind of unreachable. She did call Olivia Records, and she did talk to Judy Klugach. And that before we knew what was next, she wanted to release that record, and so she did.
Was that record accepted very well? Because it's really a radical change from everything else on their label.
I don't think that. I don't know. You know, it doesn't seem to make any difference where I am. I'm usually like the oddball in the room. It's always been like that. And you know, it's not necessarily a good thing or a bad thing. It's just the way it is. When I was out in California, you know, you would wear your makeup for your shows, and you, David Bowie taught me that. You wear your makeup for your shows, and you do these things. And I really think some of the women that were there looked at me like, you know, that, what is this? What is this? A gay woman wearing a lot of makeup and costuming, and you know, I hung out with drag queens for years. And drag queens are a lot about putting on a big show, and I'm glad I did. But I think when I got out to California and some of the lesbians with around the company looked at me like, what is, you know, nobody out there was wearing any makeup. It was a show. And I think that it's hard sometimes for people to separate the person from the show. But I don't know. But I really had a great time with Chris Williamson and Trent Fury. We had fun. Chris Williamson's got one of the best sense of humor that I've ever run into. She's great. And, you know, so it wasn't everybody, but I think I kind of put some of those gals off a little bit.
You mentioned Susan Hutchinson. She was your writing partner at the time, right?
Yes, she was.
And it looks like quite a bit of your material was written with her.
Yes, it absolutely was.
Well, from the Olivia Records' second wave album, Hocus Pocus, despite the heterosexual lyrics, I like the song This Girl Don't Care.
Thank you.
What inspired that?
Well, do you ever just get fed up? I'll go a little further and I'll tell you that these songs were written at the end of the relationship as partners, as lovers. For me and Susan Hutchinson were breaking up. It was almost over. And a lot of those songs came out of that angst. And I remember when I came to her and I said, I got out of this song. Here's what it says. It says, I don't like you anymore. You treat me like a wholesale item. And I can't see you anymore. And I said, what do you got on that, Susan? And then she wrote the second verse. Right in each other's face. And not with anger, but that's how that song was written.
This girl don't care about you, 'cause you don't care about me. Don't care about what you do, don't care about who you see. You told me that I don't matter. I don't care about what you say. I'm gonna find somebody better than you were.
From Alicia's Hocus Pocus album from 1984, that was a bit of This Girl Don't Care. Some listeners only think of you as a disco artist. How do you react to that?
Well, I think that's probably what some people have only ever known about any of the music I've written. They've only known I Love the Nightlife, and certainly I Love the Nightlife has had more acclaim and has been more popular and played over and over than any of the others. And, you know, that used to bother me. It doesn't bother me as much now as it used to. It used to bother me because I thought, well, what about all these other songs? What about all this other stuff? What are you? And what I found out is through time that other people do know those songs. And in fact, we get correspondence from people who maybe Diamond in the Rough is their favorite. Maybe Broken Woman is their favorite. And so, you know, I'm getting correspondence in the mail and online and have through time, through the years that other people have heard those other songs. And I guess I felt I wanted them all to get their chance to at least for people to know they're out there, whether they got on the air or not. You know, somebody knows that I did have some songs.
For those people who think you may have disappeared since your big hit, can you bring them up to date on your career?
I can indeed. I have been in the process for several years of putting together a studio for Mary and me. We are very deeply involved and we're doing it ourselves. And also did some little things with the remixes to spiff up the tracks vocally a little bit. And it's been great to hear them sound like this.
Your latest album is called Say It Sister. Can you tell us about it?
Say It Sister and all of the songs pretty much speak to truth, you know, and to the life experience of those of us who fall in love. It's about the blues. It's about rock and roll. And, of course, we have I Love the Nightlife, which is definitely about partying and the disco.
One of the songs on the album that shows its variety is Broken Woman.
Well, really, really and truly, from singing in the bars for so many years, gay bars and straight bars, you've come to know the people that come in and frequent the bars. Every once in a while, you see a person at that bar night after night after night after night, and they usually have a sad story, and they've usually got worse, I'd say worse than the blues, but it's about seeing people who, where they are suffering so much that they're trying to kill that pain with the booze, and that's where the song came from.
A broken woman, a man sits at the bar. Sipping gin and tonic, she thinks she's the star. The star of the dance floor, the goddess of love. She shakes to the music till the last song is gone. She wants to change, at least that's what she says. But she just can't relate. She just can't find herself. What a foolish, what a foolish. Broken woman.
Tell me about the song Cheap Affairs.
Cheap Affairs. I'm a very big fan of film noir. I once saw Lauren Bacall in a movie where she stood there in front of the piano and she sang a song in a smoky room, smoky bar in the movie. And so this Cheap Affairs, in my mind, was written with that vision in my head. In a way it's fantasy, but in a way it's not fantasy. Because I did have some pretty stupid affairs in my lifetime. I've done some dumb stuff. And I could say, can you love a woman like me? After all these cheap affairs, after all these mistakes I've made.
There is a no so bitter shady side to romance, where one cheap affair is followed by another. It was my misfortune to suffer there, but baby, I don't care. Now that you're here to love me, before I found my way to you, I rolled and tumbled through some cheap affairs. Way down where life is loose. Been the victim of some cheap affairs.
And I've only always wanted, believe it or not, I have always wanted a stable relationship with sharing back and forth all the way around and not affairs. I am a person who is faithful to the bone, and I will not be unfaithful because I treasure what I hold so dear, my partner and my lover.
Is there a song on the album, the latest album, of which you're the most proud?
Oh gosh, that'd be hard. If I have to pick a favorite, if I have to pick one that's my favorite, it would be The Diamond in the Rough. Diamond in the Rough tells a lot about me personally, and I like the song, and I think it conveys what it's meant to convey. And I think it also speaks to the experiences that some others have probably had, especially as being gay and having people talk about you and, you know, talk about you behind their back. You know, you got to be pretty tough to put up with that. And I think a lot of us have had to go through that in our gay way of life. And I'm not even going to say lifestyle. It's our lives. You got to be pretty tough to deal with that crap.
You've heard the way people talk about me. Do you like the things they say? Or do you find it disconcerting and unkind? It's a joke I've learned to live with, being different.
Diamond in the Rough by Alicia Bridges. When I was thanking Alicia for the interview, I was kind of surprised and very pleased at her reaction.
Well, I can't tell you how flattered I am that you wanted to do this interview with me, because I've been a fan of yours too. and you got some dynamite information on your website. And when Mary told me that you wanted to do the interview, I said, wait a minute. I think I know who that is. Wait a minute. And so I went back to your website there, and all was your beautiful website. But I got really excited, and I am excited to talk to you today because I'm one of your fans.
Well, that's really nice to hear.
It's a thrill. It really is. And I've done interviews through the years, but I don't think I've ever done one that meant quite so much to me.
I'm down to the last song, and you can probably guess what it is. But before I get to it, I want to thank you all for listening. And I want to especially thank Horace and Alicia Bridges for the wonderful interviews. Alicia's website is www.aliciabridges.com. And you can find out more about both artists at my site, www.queermusicheritage.com. And as always, if you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston. Of course, I'm closing the show with I Love the Nightlife Disco Round. Do you have any interesting stories about the phenomenon of that song?
I think the most astounding thing to me is that this song seems to have a life of its own. And it just keeps going and going. And it keeps being accepted and liked by all different kinds of people and all different kinds of age groups. And it's almost like a wild thing out there doing its own thing.
Action!
This is Alicia Bridges, and I love the nightlife, and I love queer music heritage.